Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, eyes on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Okay. Howdy. I am Lieutenant Colonel Retired Alan West, President and CEO of the National Center for Policy Analysis and former member of the United States Congress. And you are listening to Audrey Russo, my dear friend, on Real Talk Radio. Listen up, or else I'll drop you for push-ups. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. As ISIS continues its trek of terror across the Middle East, and Western leaders and the media are giving sparse, inaccurate information, many concerned with the truth have become frustrated and are turning to alternative sources, accurate sources. And that's why I've asked my next guest to join us on the show. Chris Mitchell is the CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief based in Jerusalem. Chris's background is in history and communications, and he has a front row seat to the chilling growth of Islamic terror groups in the region. His experience has made him uniquely capable of bringing a Judeo-Christian perspective to these daily news events that shape and affect our world. Since 2000, Chris has reported from the front lines of Israel's history and witnessed the major events of the Middle East. Chris is author of the best-selling book Dateline Jerusalem, an eyewitness account of prophecies unfolding in the Middle East. And his new book, which we'll discuss in this segment, is Destination Jerusalem, ISIS, Convert or Die, Christian Persecution, and Preparing for the Days Ahead. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome to Chris Mitchell. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Audrey. Great to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And I want to start off by saying thank you for writing this incredibly insightful and informative book. And we're going to jump right into this. Well, it's understandable why so many in the West are confused by the actions of groups like ISIS, since the mainstream media refuses to report the facts about the ideology motivating the Islamic State's movements. Now, many people have been frustrated by the lack of accurate information. Chris, is it possible that that kind of frustration was with a lack of information was one of the reasons that motivated you to write Destination Jerusalem?
It is exactly one of the reasons why I wrote it, Audrey. And it was really motivated originally back about a year ago when we had the opportunity to go in June after ISIS captured and took over Mosul, which is ancient Nineveh from the Bible. Then again, we went in August after ISIS actually advanced and took over many Christian villages as well as the Yazidi town of Sinjar. And I really wanted to be able to tell people three things. First of all, what ISIS is, who they are, what their goals are. Two, tell about what's happening to Christians, particularly in the Middle East, the persecution they're going through. And three was to help people prepare for the days ahead. You know, they are difficult and dangerous days. We see that playing out on our television screens almost on a daily basis, and I wanted to help people prepare for that. And Audrey, just to talk about ISIS and what their goals are and the ideology, we had the opportunity to sit in a tent in a refugee camp and talk to a former Iraqi soldier. His name was Shah Alan. He worked in intelligence and interrogated many ISIS prisoners. And they told him that they wanted to take over part of Iraq and Syria. Eventually, they wanted to take over Europe. And their final goal is to take over the United States and then the world. And so I think people really need to know what their ideology is, what their goals are, so that we can be prepared in the United States and the West.
Wow. You know, it kind of sounds like they're trying to, kind of raise up a new caliphate, you know, to replace the old one from the Ottoman Empire in the 20s. Is that possible?
Oh, it's exactly what they want to do. And I think people need to know what a caliphate is, and one of the chapters in the book deals with that. Back just about a year ago, in fact, the anniversary was just a couple of days ago, Abu al-Baghdadi, he declared the caliphate. It was rejected by others in the Muslim world, but it really actually inflamed others and just inspired them, because it had been nearly 100 years since the last caliphate, and it really had been the dream of Muslims around the world that there would be a caliphate that would be restored. And simply, a caliphate is an Islamic entity, like an empire, that is ruled by Islamic law called Sharia. And this is exactly what they've set up in parts of Syria and Iraq. It transcends political boundaries. The famous Sykes-Picot line that separated Syria and Iraq has really been erased right now by ISIS. We're living in a new Middle East, and really a new world, when this caliphate is really sprung onto the world stage.
It's pretty frightening, because they don't seem to be hindered. Well, they're definitely not hindered by the West, that's for sure. But they just don't seem to be hindered by anything at this point, because they're certainly funded, aren't they?
They're well funded. They're well motivated, and as you said, there really doesn't seem to be a strategy by the West, and particularly the United States, to come against ISIS. President Obama, he talks about a strategy, but Senator John McCain was criticizing the strategy of the Obama administration. It does seem to be ineffective and not being able to blunt the advance of ISIS, which is really motivating these jihadists around the world. And one of the things we talk about in the book is that the success of ISIS for the past year or so is really motivated many other jihadis, and when they see ISIS being successful, their thought is, well, Allah must be blessing them, so we'll join them. So that's why we see, recruits coming from different parts of the Western world, whether it's the United States, Europe, maybe Australia. It also has inspired other groups like Boko Haram in Nigeria to ally themselves align themselves with ISIS. That's happening in the Sinai Peninsula as well. So as they gather momentum and they're not being soundly defeated by any force, that's just breeding success and momentum that they're taking around the world.
Yeah, and sadly and tragically, the victims of the greatest victims of their success are Christians, who are really at this point the most persecuted people on this planet. You have a unique perspective to confirm the fact that ISIS and their ilk, and it's all backed by the Quran, you have a unique perspective to confirm that this is happening in the region. What are you encountering as far as Christian persecution?
Well, we had the opportunity to sit down and talk face-to-face with people that had literally faced ISIS face-to-face. Many of them, I'll give you an example, they were given four choices. The first thing they could do is they could leave their homes that they had lived in for years or generations. The second choice they had, that they could stay, but they would have to pay what's called the jizya tax for non-Muslims or infidels. The third thing they could do is they can convert from Christianity to Islam. And the fourth grisly choice they had, they could die by the sword. And so we really heard testimonies from a number of people who said that ISIS took over their homes. And I'll give you one story. There was a man named Fadi, and when we were interviewing many of these Christians about what ISIS was doing, he asked to be interviewed, but he asked us not to interview him to show his face. So we videotaped him from behind, and he told him that one of his neighbors informed on him and told him, ISIS, that he was a Christian. They searched his home, and they found two New Testaments. One was camouflaged, given to him by a U.S. service man or woman. The other one had an American flag on the inside, so they accused him of being a missionary or a spy and threatened to kill him. Now, he doesn't know how it happened, but miraculously he survived. But in the midst of our interview, he broke down and cried, and he just asked Jesus to save him, knowing that he had very little hope of a job or a livelihood. He had an 8-year-old son, a teenage daughter, and a wife. And he just broke down and sobbed. And he also asked Jesus to forgive ISIS, believe it or not. He gave me one of those New Testaments, and it's, to me, just a reminder of just the thousands of Fadis who are there here in the Middle East and suffering this kind of persecution.
Amazing. These Christians are amazing. They're incredible witness to the rest of the Christians in the world, that they're standing so firmly. You know, and of course, as you had mentioned, Boko Haram, who is, you know, attacking Christians in Nigeria and continues to do so. They're emboldened because they've allied themselves with ISIS. They're kind of they see they're the big guy on the block, and so they're just, you know, it makes them so much stronger. Chris, what can the listeners learn from your book concerning the treatment of Christians in the Middle East, especially by groups like ISIS?
Well, the first thing I think they could do, Audrey, is be informed, to know that it is happening, and that's what I try to do it in the book, and try to make it personal with a story like Fadi that people can relate to. That's the first thing I think they can do, and the other thing they can do is pray for the Christians here in the Middle East, and also give to those organizations that may be helping them out physically, and also raise their voices so people could speak out and help influence politicians. And I tell you, one of the chapters we wrote in the book is called Saturday People, Sunday People. And simply it means that years ago, it was the Saturday people, the Jews, who were really exiled from many of these nations in the Middle East. And now it's the Sunday people. In fact, that's one of the mottos of some jihadists is, you know, first we attack the Saturday people, the Jews, and then we attack the Christians, the Sunday people. And thankfully, actually, it's been many times Jewish leaders have spoken out on behalf of Christians that are being persecuted. One example we cite in the book is Ron Lauder, who's the head of the World Jewish Congress, one of the most influential Jewish leaders in the world. And he spoke up at the Feast of Tabernacles here last year. Even the first time he did it was 2013, and he said he would not be silent to see what's happening for to the Christians. And I think the Jewish people understand what it means to be silent in the face of this kind of persecution, and that's why they're speaking up.
You know, Chris, doesn't it sadden you to see how the West, Western leaders in the media, but mostly the Western leaders, how they are almost ignoring the Christian persecution, and that any time that a group like ISIS strikes, that the first thing that comes out of their mouth is that nothing about the victims, but rather a defense of Islam instead.
I that happened exactly earlier this year with President Obama, unfortunately, right after 21 Coptic Christians were beheaded on a Libyan beach. And I'm sure most people have seen that video. And at the National Prayer Breakfast, he did mention that, but he also said, people can't go on their high horse because look what happened in the Crusades and look what the atrocities were done then. It really seemed an inappropriate analogy, and unfortunately he didn't speak up for the Christians. It seemed to be a defense about Islam. And that, too, is one of the chapters we wrote in the book. It's about know your enemy, and unfortunately I think President Obama really doesn't recognize ISIS as Islamic. He said that verbatim. And then we talk in the book about many former Muslims. Noni Darwish is one. Brother Rashid, who has a program that goes to many Muslims, and they say, you know, almost verbatim, ISIS is following what's prescribed in the Quran and the example of the life of Muhammad, and yet many of our leaders muddy the waters and really don't say exactly what's happening through ISIS and their Islamic ideology.
Yeah, it's incredible how they continue it like a mantra that the minute it has nothing to do with, no, of course, ISIS is or the Islamic State is not Islamic. Okay, whatever you say.
Exactly.
there must be a gas leak in the room, I guess, anyway. Chris, now, if there's one thing you would hope the listeners would glean from your book, what would that be?
I think they could help prepare for the days ahead. You know, I cite two authors of the days that we're living in. The first one is Charles Dickens. In the book, he wrote The Tale of Two Cities. The first line is, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." And I see we're seeing great light and darkness in the world at the same time. In Isaiah the prophet, he said in chapter 60, "Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of the Lord has risen upon you, but deep darkness the peoples." And so I think, again, we're seeing great light and great darkness. And I think perhaps one of the most important chapters here is preparing for those days ahead. You know, we see terror attacks that are random, whether it's Garland, Texas, or Moore, Oklahoma, Sydney, Australia. These things are designed to strike fear in our hearts. That's exactly what it says in the Quran, Surah, or chapter 8, verse 12, and it says, "Strike fear into the hearts of the infidels." You know, that I think that's going to intensify, that will increase, but, you know, the Bible says to look up, for your redemption draweth nigh, and there's also a quote we have in the book by Winston Churchill, and when they were facing the onslaught of Nazi Germany, he spoke up in the House of Commons, and at the end of his speech, he said, "Let us brace ourselves to our duty so that men in the future may say that this indeed was our finest hour." And I think this can be the finest hour if the West rises up, if the church rises up. That's, I think, the kind of opportunity that history is presenting to us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Chris, having, you know, you have to cover some horrific realities in the Middle East. What keeps you encouraged?
Well, I think the first thing is that thankfully we have a lot of people that pray for us, and that means a great deal, and I think that sustained us for the last 15 years. For example, when we arrived here in August, the what's called the Second Intifada began 5 weeks later, and so near home, school, and work, there were terror attacks and suicide bombings. You know, and we had just moved there with my wife and three children, and it really was prayer that kept us. It was sort of like living out Psalm 91, that he that dwells in the secret place of the Most High mm-hmm. shall abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And so I think it's the Lord that just sustains us and keeps us going. And we look both, I guess, to the headlines of the newspaper and the Bible to see the unfolding events that are happening. And you can see the interconnection between both the Bible and the news of the day. And I think those are the things that sustain us and keep us going throughout these you know, challenging times.
Absolutely. And as someone who is residing in Israel, I'm going to give a shameless plug for Israeli tourism. Chris, it's safe to come and visit Israel, isn't it?
I think that's a great idea because unlike the perception, if most tourists that come here in the last 15 years that I've been here, they are safe and they usually have a wonderful time. I gave an example just a couple of weeks ago. I spoke to a tour group that was maybe 40 people, and I began by saying, "How many people of you, you're either family or friends, said that you were crazy for coming to Israel?" And almost everybody raised their hand. And then I asked them, "Now that you're here, do you feel safe?" And almost everyone else raised their hand. And the feeling people get when they come here is they feel safe, they feel secure. We're talking about ISIS, but it's usually in Iraq and Syria, you know, the Sinai Peninsula, and within Israel, they do their utmost to keep people safe, and especially tourists. And so I think it's a great place to come. My wife says that when you read the Bible before you come to Israel, it's like reading it in black and white, but after you come here, it's like reading it in color. And so I think people really need to afford themselves this opportunity.
Oh, I love it. And one of these days, maybe I'll make at least a brief Aaliyah. We'll see what happens, I hope.
Yeah, I think you should come, Audrey. I think you'd love it.
I got to come. I have to come. Now, Chris, a very important question. Where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and purchase Destination Jerusalem?
Well, they can find that Destination Jerusalem at DestinationJerusalemBook.com. It's DestinationJerusalemBook.com. Or they can go to Amazon.com and find it there. And they can follow our work on CBNNews.com. I have a blog called Jerusalem Dateline. We also have a weekly show called Jerusalem Dateline as well, and where we try to go more in depth in what's happening here in Jerusalem, Israel, and the Middle East.
Excellent. And you're also in the social networks, yes?
Yeah, we're on Twitter and Facebook as well. Yep.
Excellent. And, of course, as always, I will have that information with links in all my social networks in my after show. Thanks so much, Chris, for taking the time to share your work with us, and thank you for all you do for the cause of truth and freedom. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
I'd love to, Audrey, and thanks so much. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much. And until then, may God richly bless you and your work. Bye for now.
Thank you.